Welcome back. It's a Monday, the 4th day of March, 2024. I'm your host, Mark Hall, and let's start off our look at what's going on around the nation and the world today with a truly amazing headline, certainly the top story, and something I don't get to do very often. The Supreme Court finally got one right. I know it sounds like it should have been obvious, and ultimately it must have been, because it was a 9-0 decision by what the Daily Mail's coverage calls a conservative majority court. Hey, folks, this was a unanimous court, which certainly seems to imply that when it's this obvious, that doesn't so much matter. In a high-stakes case about whether or not a few criminals in Colorado could take it upon themselves to make war on the United States, the entire concept of free elections, and the actually elected president by ruling he can't appear on the ballot. Answer? Hell no. As you probably recall, black robe priests pretending to be judges in Colorado ruled that the actually elected president was barred under their twisting of the so-called insurrection clause of the actually never ratified anyway 14th Amendment to the United States Constitution. Because while Trump may be old, he's not as old as Joe Biden, and unlike Biden, he wasn't around to see the Civil War, although he wouldn't remember it anyway, and therefore didn't actually participate in that insurrection, or for that matter, any other, real or imagined, since. The 20-page ruling is pretty blunt and actually fairly clear. The court ruled that only Congress can decide if Trump is or is not eligible to run, saying, quote, states may not unilaterally disqualify Donald Trump from the ballot. The judgment of the Colorado Supreme Court is reversed. And they noted that responsibility for enforcing Section 3, meaning of that 14th Amendment, against federal officeholders and candidates rests with Congress and not the states. The judgment of the Colorado Supreme Court, sick, therefore cannot stand. All 9 members of the court agree with that result, and get this, they added, because the Constitution makes Congress, rather than the states, responsible for enforcing Section 3 against federal officeholders and candidates, we reverse. And here we go, folks. This is probably the capper. Nothing, they said, in the Constitution requires that we endure such chaos. Unquote. And now if they can just extend that principle to the rest of the Constitution and the concept of the rule of law, too. Reaction to the decision was interesting, some of it predictable. For example, and this is key, folks, Zero Hedge noted that the left is already having difficulty with the fact that the decision was unanimous. Even the far left seems to recognize there must be a limit somewhere to what we can get away with. And as Tyler Durden noted, all that's left now is for the White Whorehouse to accuse what they thought were their friends on the far left side of the Supreme Court of being Putin spies. While in Colorado, the traitor masquerading as Secretary of State, Jenna Griswold, went on MSNBC and cried her eyes out, quote, it'll be up to the American voters and all those that we can get to make photocopies to save our democracy. Oh, good grief. I'll say it again. This just goes to show you what happens when you let people who don't believe in the Bible put their hands on it and then swear an oath before a God they don't believe in either to do something they haven't got a clue about concerning a government that they don't even know what form it is supposed to be. Anybody who doesn't know the difference between a constitutional republic and democracy has no business, folks, being in elected office or in a bureaucracy even, anywhere. But when they're openly treasonous besides, sometimes you may even get a 9-0 decision pointing it out. For his part, the man who must not be named on ballots in politically correct states declared on his True Social network that the decision was, quote, a big win for America, and he called the ruling unifying and inspirational. And as to the point of how it could be unanimous, one of the court's farthest left, Elena Kagan, asked the attorney for the traitors why one state should have the power to determine which candidates can and cannot be on the ballot for a national election. Quote, why should a single state have the ability to make this determination not only for their own citizens, but also for the nation, she asked the attorney, adding that the move would be quite extraordinary. And even the eminently blackmailable Chief Justice John Roberts couldn't quite stomach this attempt at election rigging, saying that, quote, it'll come down to just a handful of states that are going to decide the presidential election, he said. Wait a minute, and that's somehow new? Gee, John, were you paying attention 4 years ago? Referring to the potential effect of what Colorado was trying to do, and noting, that's a pretty daunting consequence, unquote. And I guess in hindsight, maybe what he means now is better late than never. But just so we're clear that it's not even remotely over, and that the deep state already knew that this particular decision was almost inevitable, we have this from the administration's chief legal terrorist, the puppet masquerading as Attorney General Merrick Garland, who vowed that the election rigging will continue, regardless of what the law or the Supreme Court has to say about it. And ironically, he did so in a church. Ponder that.
The right to vote is still under attack.
Well, wait a second. Full stop already, because that's the only thing he says here that's actually true. And they're not going to let the Supreme Court or the Constitution or you, you peons out there in white rural American flyover country, we'll come back to that one in a minute, do or say anything about it otherwise. Hell, we'll call you insurrectionists, throw you in the gulags, and throw away the key. And we won't worry about your right to a fair and speedy trial either, much less a jury of your peers. Still, though, it's funnier when you hear it all together.
The right to vote is still under attack. And that is why the Justice Department is fighting back. That is why one of the first things I did when I came into office was to double the size of the voting section of the Civil Rights Division.
Well, I guess you ought to add, right after I charged everybody who saw through what we were doing with insurrection.
That is why we are challenging efforts by states and jurisdictions to implement discriminatory, burdensome, and unnecessary restrictions on access to the ballot.
Why can't you photocopy them? And for crying out loud, why can't you just invade the country and take it over in the ballot box? We already give you free phones and bus tickets at the border. Why not hand out a couple boxes of ballots to every invader, too?
Including those related to mail-in voting, the use of drop boxes, and voter ID requirements. That is why we are working to block the adoption of discriminatory redistricting plans that dilute the vote of black voters and other voters of color.
Yeah, when your vote is diluted, we're the ones that get to do it. We'll do it with illegal aliens, he told the assembled black crowd at historic Tabernacle Baptist Church in Selma, Alabama. And I watched the video twice, folks. The assembled faces and the crowd behind him, the sycophants on display, didn't so much as move, much less crack a smile, while he spread the BS by the shovelful. I guess they'd been told, you better not laugh at anything that's getting ready to be shoveled here. I was even pleasantly surprised to see that President Trump is finally saying the quiet part right out loud. He said this at a rally in Greensboro, North Carolina over the weekend.
Republicans must win. We want a landslide. We have to win. We have to win so that it's too big to rig. Too big to rig. Too big to rig.
Now, here's a story that I saw that I thought was interesting for a couple reasons. One, it comes from Matt Taibbi. And if you know Matt Taibbi, he used to write for Rolling Stone. Good journalist. I've always enjoyed his work. He is a reputable, honest journalist. He tells the truth. He's what a good journalist should be. He also unabashedly leans left. But Matt Taibbi is starting to realize that a lot of the people that lean the same way he did are exactly the kinds of folks that are pushing this crap. And so he's occasionally writing about something that needs to be said. This is from Matt Taibbi. It was on Zero Hedge. He says, MSNBC, Paul Krugman, and the other leftists are panicking over, and I'm quoting, white rural rage. Now, I'll read as much of this as I can stand, but it's absolutely disgusting. But it does fit. Now, he says, this week we saw the following in undisguised class hatred. New York Times, MSNBC, they all slobbered over a new book reviewed by Paul Krugman, on the latest threat to their leftist. Remember the line from Wicked Witch of the West?
Who would have thought a good little girl like you could destroy all my beautiful wickedness?
Yeah, over the latest threat to their beautiful wickedness. Mika Brzezinski, in one of the interviews for the leftist rags, TV rags, said, I'll start with you, Tom. Why are rural white voters a threat to democracy? Well, there's a loaded question. Answer. Fastball delivered University of Maryland professor, co-author of the just-released hit book, White Rural Rage, The Threat to American Democracy, Tom Schaller took a swing. He and Mika first complained that rural voters should be supporting Joe Biden, because he's one of them. He's a rural, albeit senile, given his roots. And as Matt Taibbi said, you got to be pretty high to call Scranton rural, but whatever. Schaller then read off America's small-town charge sheet. And I'll quote, rural whites, he said, are the most racist, xenophobic, anti-immigrant, anti-gay, conspiracist, anti-democratic
comma, and, quote, they don't believe in an independent press. What does that mean? MSNBC. And if you don't like it, we're going to kill you. Ha ha. And we're going to shut you up and we'll ban you from two. Come on. There's a point I'm making here by trying to read this without throwing up, folks. They don't believe in an independent press or free speech. Free speech. The kind of free speech that says, if you speak that, we'll kill you. We'll cut you off. We'll ban you. We'll shadow ban you. We'll cut you from Gulag. And, quote, they're most likely to accept or excuse violence, he said. I suspect that may be the closest thing he got to the truth, because I have a suspicion some of these racists and domestic terrorists that they're trying to set up for extinction just might begin to excuse violence against people like this. White Rural Rage says, Matt Taibbi, which I made the mistake of reading, is a vicious manifesto in the anti-populist tradition. Okay, he gives some other examples of equally rabidly evil books. And he says, when rural voters in the late 1800s defied New York banking interests and demanded currency reform to allow farmers to escape from one of the original rigged games in finance, relentless propaganda ensued. Rural populists were depicted as dirty, bigoted, ignorant. They refused the expert wisdom of their betters. They represented a frantic challenge against every feature of our civilization. Now, as I'm reading this, this is the point that I want to make. Think about the contrast here. Every feature of our civilization. What is a feature of our civilization today? Little boys that don't have a penis. Little girls that have their breasts cut off before they reach puberty. Little boys and girls that are taught that there is no such thing as a God. That there is, that your rights, you don't have any rights because you were evolved from a little lump of slime. You're never going to reproduce because we're not going to allow that. You're going to eat bugs because if you're a good little slave, that's all we're going to let you have. This, folks, is their civilization. And by the way, Scripture warned us about it. It says there'll come a time, and do you think we're there yet, when they'll call evil good and good evil. That is precisely exactly what I would suggest we are seeing writ large right here. But matter of fact, they're calling something a god and saying, tomorrow will be a feast to Yah. They don't even know his name nowadays. That's how far gone they are. At least Aaron knew his name. These are your gods, O America. Everything we see in this Torah portion, if you look at it, is kind of a mini version of the evil that we're seeing writ even larger today. Okay, back to the contrast here. These people waged a shameful insurrection against law and natural honesty. Says Letitia James. Says the people who are basically saying, if you don't toe the line, if you think you dare to run for president and we don't want you to, we're going to steal everything you have. We'll destroy your business. If you don't like it, we'll steal your buildings in New York. Last one out, turn out the lights. We are literally seeing it's a revolution that's been done. And what's the problem here? Just like Aaron, most Americans, I think if you're starting to figure it out, most Americans are still quietly saying, okay, give me your gold. Throw it in the fire. We'll see what comes out. Give me your kids. Throw them in the fire. We'll see what comes out. Let me poison poke them. We'll see what comes out. They are going silently to their graves and not saying a lick. A populist caricature of Judge Magazine, this is again Taibbi talking about the late 1800s, showed a violent, destructive idiot, a real-life Lenny from the still unwritten book of Mice and Men, standing over the defiled corpse of civilized America. And he prints a comic from the late 1800s, a political cartoon. The theme is back, though, now. Condescension multiplied. We just had a pandemic that occurred graphically and demonstrated the social contributions of farmers, truckers, train operators, and other essential workers, the people whose very jobs were demonized during the crisis as murderous horse-paced eaters and insurrectionists. What have you done for me lately? You gave me the food, you moved the trucks, you moved the goods. What am I going to do to show you my regard for the wonderful sacrifices you made for America and the great democracy? Yeah, here. Eat bugs or die. Their chief crimes? Protesting the lockdowns. Protesting the school closures that disproportionately affected him. Now, I've always thought the school closure thing was funny, folks. Because ironically, school closures was probably about the only good thing that came out of the poison poke epidemic and the lockdowns. Because at least a lot of Americans realize, you know, my kids are a hell of a lot better off, smarter, more educated now than they were when they were getting their dumbing down right there in the cesspools every day. So they may have complained at first, but ultimately they're saying, I don't think I want them to go back. So there was a little bit of good that came out of the evil, and that's one of the ways that unintended consequences work, especially when you're dealing with the creator of the universe. Okay, and they consumed foreign-supplied misinformation, Russia, and so forth, that led them to refuse the appropriate political wisdom and expert advice, take your poison poke, that was offered to them. All right, then it's Nobel-winning columnist. What a scumbag. Paul Krugman of the New York Times spent the last year telling ignorant middle America that its negative feelings about the economy are demonstrably false because Bidenflation is good for you. In spite of the fact what your bank accounts or home valuations might say. Quote, Bidenomics is still working very well. When white rural rage came out this week, he rushed to review it. And the intransigent refusal of yokels to accept his wisdom became his favorite hobby horse. All right. And the story here goes on to say that this mystery of rural white rage is remarkable on a number of levels. Now, what's funny, this is Mika Brzezinski and all these leftists there sitting in their ivory towers and demanding that the peons not be allowed to even eat cake, is because they don't get it. It's the reason why they beheaded Marie Antoinette. She didn't get it. Okay? There's a whole bunch here about the decline of small-town rural manufacturing. It's a complicated story. Imports pay a role. But here's the point. Why don't these rural yokels, when their jobs go away and their manufacturing gets shut down, why don't they know what they should do? They should move to San Francisco. They can be right there on the street with the other homeless. They won't have the same benefits because they're not illegal. But hey, that's where the good jobs are. Why don't you go to San Francisco? Go to the cesspools. Yeah, some cities, they admit, have become unaffordable, so a lot of workers are reluctant to leave their families and communities. And the fact that globalization, technological change, fake money, and poison pokes have devastated small towns, made the urban keyboard warriors richer, and the rural voters can't afford to move to the cities, well, that's not their fault. Okay? Krugman and company, they can't figure out why rural America is unaccountably hostile to them. All right. So anyway, there's a whole lot here about how it is that these leftists just shake their heads and they just can't figure out why people don't appreciate all the wonderful things that their communist masters and overlords are doing for them.
Here's a report that I think is related to several stories we've already talked about today. When I first saw this, I thought it said, CDC orders destruction of all COVID data nationwide. Wait, is that really news, I wondered? The Center for Death and Control's been doing that all along. It's just that occasionally it leaks out. But wait a minute, this actually says CCP. And I realized, no, it's in the other communist Chinese stronghold, one of those that's pulling the puppet strings of the Biden Fuhrer. The communist Chinese government at home in Beijing has demanded a nationwide purge, says the Epoch Times, of all COVID-19 data within its so-called healthcare system, says a reporter, a source from Changsha Hunan, who goes by the name Mr. Chen and holds a high rank at a local hospital, quote, the government is instructing all health departments across the country to eradicate all COVID-19 related data, including information on the entire epidemic prevention, sick, process, and vaccination records. They must obliterate all data without leaving a trace, and computer records must be deleted entirely, said Mr. Chen. And he added that the directive extends to the entire nation, including vaccine and anything Big Brother China considers embarrassing related to its epidemic prevention, sick, measures. Quote, no data can be spared, neither on paper nor on computers. Records of vaccine administration are to be expunged, as well as records of nucleic acid testing and any embarrassing incidents that occurred during the entire epidemic prevention process. And realize, of course, folks, that if they can get rid of all the second and third witnesses, there's no way to corroborate, much less contradict. And so anything that Big Brother's Ministry of Truth says stands, or put a bit differently, the good little peons, if they want their socialist credit scores to be high anyway, had better slurp it right on up. And for those like your host who thought, this does sound so much like the other three-letter agencies beginning with Communist or Center 4 in the United States, Chen added this, that the CCP seems to be worried that a new wave of COVID deaths due to the vaccine itself, gee, do you think, could come in the future, and they're pre-preparing their excuses. Quote, the COVID-19 plandemic, he spelled it wrong, and its vaccine have already resulted in a considerable number of deaths among the elderly. If there is another large-scale death in 10 years or less, the government will attribute it to other causes. Oh, isn't that innovative of them? Rather than the COVID-19, not vaccine. And he added, I personally believe the vaccines we've received are counterfeit. Well, maybe they're something other than they're being advertised as, folks. That at least we know for sure. And he noted, they come with adverse effects, unquote. And wow, tell me something we really don't know. But at least they're consistent in a lying, consistent kind of way. From Atlanta, Georgia, where criminals knowingly boink you, local taxpayers certainly, and their diversity hires, and the rule of law, and everything else that they can get away with, while the so-called judges look the other way, seems like there are some unintended, or are they, consequences coming home to roost as well. Over the weekend, after being open for only one day, a Six Flags amusement park near Atlanta, Georgia, was overrun by a mob of 600 or so rioters and other youths who proceeded to fight each other, destroy property, and, yeah, shoot the place up, as well as a lot of other mayhem and destruction. The incident led to a shootout involving the Cobb County Police Department and resulted in the hospitalization of one alleged assailant, said the department in a statement as officers followed the crowd out, ensuring that they left the property. An unknown number of suspects fired at them, and an officer returned fire, striking one of the suspects. Says InfoWars coverage, the shocking string of events, and they have the video, there's a lot of it up online going viral in various places and ways, unfolded on Saturday evening in Austell, a city in the Atlanta metro region, where thousands of people turned out for the opening day at Six Flags Over Georgia before the event devolved into, well, exactly what society is on a larger scale, extreme mob violence. Evacuations were forced as security, SICK, lost control of the crowd, and videos have been circulating on social media, at least until they're purged, showing all kinds of mob violence. The suspect, about which no information was released, gee, wonder why, was transported to Grady Memorial Hospital after having some treatment at the scene. His condition is currently unknown, but, notes Tyler Durden for Zero Hedges coverage, the likelihood of the teen being a minority is high, and the fact that the media focus is what it is, may be in preparation for yet another attempt to provoke a BLM-like response, sometime in the near future when it's politically expedient. Whether that means another Biden gaffe or another Supreme Court decision. And the story notes that in spite of the usual claims from the cesspool managers that crime in the U.S. is going down, no, reporting is, folks, violent mob actions like what we just saw at Georgia's Six Flags have been rising steadily over the past few years. Could it be that gun-free killing zones are part of the problem? Lots of victims in target-rich areas, for sure. And why don't crime stats reflect this? Because, says Zero Hedge, progressive city governments rarely prosecute the people involved. No, they prosecute those that try to defend themselves instead. And these low prosecutions numbers, plus a plethora of easy marks ripe for plucking or worse, lead to low convictions and low reported crime rates. Another factor in the change is the change in FBI crime reporting policies during the pandemic, which allows many cities across the U.S. to avoid providing complete crime numbers until, are you sitting down, the year 2025. Now, it's just about everybody who's been paying attention. The refusal to severely punish those who have committed violent offenses and repeat criminals at the same time in the name of progressive BS like racial equity is swiftly and perhaps terminally destabilizing American cities. The widespread exodus of real people from the cesspools over past years is testament to growing public concerns over a lack of public safety. And when a specific group of people are assured that they will not suffer for committing crimes, but they may profit handsomely, they're incentivized to commit more crimes. What an amazing concept. It's not rocket science, notes everybody with half a brain. It's common sense, and it's being proven literally on a daily basis. We'll close now with this story that raises more questions than it answers. Did you know the Northeast has a 1 million barrel gasoline supply reserve? Established in 2014 after Hurricane Sandy, which cut through refineries and resulted in fuel shortages and major mayhem. But now, as part of over 1,000 pages of emergency legislation and $1.66 trillion bucks of additional fiat money printing and spending, it is vital to national security and the budget that that reserve, having been paid for, is sold off, shut down, and closed at a loss. Who slipped this in, and what do they know they've got planned that's coming right there next? And may Yahuwah bless you and yours.